Okay. Hi. Hello, everybody. We are continuing with our webinar book on the egoic lotus. I haven't really given it a title, but I will at some point. And here, you know, we try to begin with the rendition of the lotus before us, fed as it is from below and also from above. It is said the fifth feeds on the fourth. And when one is focused within the egoic lotus, probably at the time of the third initiation and beyond, one is definitely part of that feeding from below. But in general, it works out that whatever quality is gathered to oneself as a capacity below finds its way into the egoic lotus. Now, a little bit of a review. We began with the 10 soul groups, or 10 human groups, however you wanted to call them, all the way from the most primitive types, of which there are very few, all the way up to the Master of Wisdom. We went on to the 8 stages of adaptation, and we matched the 10 soul or human groups with the stages of adaptation. We dealt with the different kinds of energy transfers and how these transfers occur in relation to the different petals. And we also discussed the names of the various types of lotuses, all the way from the lotuses of revelation down to the lotuses in bud, of which there are no more pure examples, strictly speaking, at this time of human evolution. We also dealt with the triangles of chakras, the pranic triangle, man controlled from the astral body, man controlled from the mental body, advanced man up to the first initiation, spiritual man from the first to the third initiation, and spiritual man from the third initiation to the fifth initiation. And we're looking at how these different triangles are related to the unfoldment of the petals. And one more thing, of course, we began to work with astrology, the astrology of initiation and the different kinds of planets which are active at each of the 5 initiations, and we try to look on the egoic lotus for the petals in which, or in relation to which, the initiations would occur. So here is this hidden structure within our esoteric nature, the Temple of Solomon, the great sunflower of the sun, the product for us of the work of the solar angels and of their projection, which I consider to be the angel of the presence. Of course, not all lotuses are formed in that way. Obviously, there's a much more rapid formation when the angel of the solar angel can be involved in the process. In the previous chain, the moon chain, and probably in the previous major solar system, the first, the method of egoic lotus construction was different and involved a great upsurging of energy from the animal man of the period and a great downflow from the monad. And no solar angels were involved in the construction. Just how the construction occurred, of course, you know, we are not given. One day all this will be studied in terms of the history of our planet. You know, there will be planetary historians who trace the development of our planetary logos from the earliest days. And some hints about that have already been made available from The Secret Doctrine and other of HPB's books, but especially The Secret Doctrine. So we're living in an amazing planetary scheme, which from one perspective is just a tiny speck of dust, and even from a larger perspective, simply a non-sacred planet within our predominantly second-ray solar system. But from our perspective, so many Mahamanvantaras separate a planetary logos from the status of the master. That's quite extraordinary. It was many Mahamanvantaras ago, Mahakalpas ago, that what is now our planetary logos was of the status of a master of the wisdom. Now, sometimes these terms, Mahamanvantara, can be used in an intra-systemic manner. Usually they mean from one solar system to the next. That is a Mahakalpa, the duration of a solar system, and also the interim period equal to a Mahakalpa. But sometimes there are different charts and tabulations which make it seem that the Mahamanvantara is a lesser cycle. But when we take a look at our present solar angels, we will see that they are returning nirvanis from a previous solar system. And so they were man in the previous solar system. In this case, the Mahamanvantara does mean the duration of a solar system, and they've been through a tremendous education on the star or in the star system of Sirius in order to move into the next creative hierarchy, which is the fifth creative hierarchy, even though it seems to be lower than the fourth. It really isn't. Well, there's some mysteries there, you know, the connection of the fifth and the third. But suffice it to say, these entities that supervise our development and are participating in their own development meanwhile are from a previous solar system and very advanced beings who find their home within the council of the solar logos. And so if you think that it took a whole solar system for them to reach their status and supervise us, then what shall we say of a planetary logos who is far beyond them in development? So in that case, the Mahamanvantara is probably not an intra-systemic term, but probably many Mahamanvantaras separate one of the stature of a solar of a planetary logos from a solar angel. And we know at least one system separates the status of a solar angel from what is now a human being. You know, we're missing some of the major keys because they are hidden in the science of cycles. All knowledge on the third subplane of the atmic plane, where the science of cycles is revealed to us, at least in the measure that it can be. So, you know, there's a lot of blindness around what we're planning to do or trying to do. But still, when you think about what the average human being has been exposed to and what their view of the world may be, as limited as ours is, it's quite larger than the average unenlightened view. And for that, we have to be very grateful to certain great masters and Chohans who have decided to share what they know, even maybe a little prematurely from the point of view of some of their colleagues, but decided to share what they know with us so that we can rise out of the ignorance in which we otherwise would have lived for ages. So I have a lot of gratitude when I'm going over this material, as incomprehensible as it is, and though, you know, I think maybe I can grasp 2 or 3% of it, I still have a lot of gratitude for what they've done to lay the wisdom of the ages before us so we can begin to rise into the next kingdom in a more intelligent manner. The preliminary material for discussion here at this time is the crises of the soul. Let's see if I have here anything that will, tables of references, yes. The crises of the soul, I'd like to, you know, cross that out ahead of time. It doesn't mean we really have covered it by any means completely. But what I'm doing, as you know, if you've been following this, is to gather material which, if understood to some degree, will help us understand the process of the egoic lotus better and the kind of historical activities in the history of man that accompany the unfoldment, the stimulation, organization, opening and unfoldment of the tiers of petals and the petals. So rather than study the egoic lotus in vacuo, on its own entirely, without relations to many other things, I've decided on a different process. And it's one I've been, I think I've been doing this for 20 years. I remember in the old days of the PhD class, we used to have a 7th and or final class, or maybe 11th or 12th or 13th final class, and I'd take out great big tables and lay them end on end on end, and lay out rolls of, I don't know, butcher paper or whatever kind of paper it was, and begin the pre-electronic work of drawing out all kinds of possible correlations which we, the students, attempting to achieve a modicum of synthesis, would study together. Now, you know, not everybody has synthesis on their mind or has a mind that is interested in synthesis, but I figured it was a fitting way to end certainly the first PhD class, which was begun in 1991 and then concluded in 1994, after which, not long after which, the second five-year PhD class, PhDE really, a Doctor of Philosophy in Esotericism, meaning simply we're studying esotericism seriously and systematically. And there have been many of these around the world, and I've always tried to end with some kind of synthetic overview. But it requires the study of many different areas which then can be correlated. Now we're studying the crises of the soul, which almost inevitably bring about crises of the personality. So there are a few places where these references appear. Let's see, I'm not sure why this is here. The need to resolve tension. Aha, that's what a crisis is, probably a definition in order to emerge into a new situation. Decision is required. Planet of decision is Saturn. Therefore, it is a planet of crisis, and Libra is one of the signs, from one perspective at least, of crisis, and Mercury will be involved. So this next little section is about three signs of crisis. From this group of signs and their attendant constellations, and that's such a hint, you know, because the signs are really Devic fields, which are attuned to the actual energy, the greater energies of the constellation. Oh, I've been writing my daughter. Oh, heavens. All right. Mother's Day, you know, today. So, I will say this, that signs are Devic fields of energies. attuned to much greater energies which are emanating from the constellations. And maybe not just our zodiacal, our zodiacal constellations. In other words, we have a field around the Earth, in a certain section of the Earth, which is, let's say, the Libran field, and it's attuned to the great lives in the constellation Libra, so that those energies emanating from the constellation can be received and specialized and somehow accessed through the Devic field that is attuned to it. That idea, at least a good part of it, is from Alan Leo's book from 1917, something like that, Esoteric Astrology. He was definitely an esoterically inclined astrologer, and that's why I think the Tibetan quotes him quite a bit, along with Safariel in a more exoteric manner. But Leo was tending towards esotericism, and the Tibetan frequently holds him up as one who had often an esoteric understanding. Okay. Well, I see that, you know, this is a little funny, but, sitting around all day, you know, one can have a little rise in blood pressure here, so I'm just assuring my daughter that I'm still living here. Anyway, these signs are all signs of crisis and indicate the progressive influence of the other nine signs and the situations which evolve out of their activity. So we're going to see nine signs of crisis shortly, and we're going to also see these particular signs. Some of them may overlap. Let's see, Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. And here we have, we don't have any of those signs in the other nine signs of crisis, which is interesting. So it's beginning to look as if all the signs will be, from one perspective or another, signs of crisis. All right, so these are the testing points in the process of the play of energies from the other nine signs. And these energies affect individual aspirants. Testing points in the interplay of energies from the other nine signs, and these energies affect individual aspirants. There are always those moments when things do not continue smoothly, but in which the opportunity, shall we say Saturn, is given to move to another level of functioning. There is a lot of stress and friction often at these testing points, but then when decision, Saturn, is properly made, the move forward can occur. Okay, Leo, the crisis of individualization. This shows itself in two stages as diffused inchoate power and personality integration. Now, if we're going to think of the egoic lotus, this whole thing is formed during that period. I won't speak with what degree of exactitude in terms of the timing, but formed at that period, which we call the period of individualization, and through the inflow of energy from the solar angel and energy from the monad, all focusing on the third plane of the higher mental plane, this structure, not unfolded, of course, as a bud, is formed. So individualization is really more or less the moment of the beginning of the egoic lotus. Maybe for different methods of individualization, the time taken to create an egoic lotus is steadily building from before the moment of monadic impact. This is difficult to say because the different methods of building the egoic lotus obviously do exist. And not all of them are built by the subjective structuring power of the solar angel, which underlies or forms this structure made of the substance of the higher mental plane in its third division. Well, individualization does lead to a kind of focusing where there's a basic seed of power planted in the central fire of this structure. So it has not yet formed, but it's inchoate, it's not in form, but it will inevitably appear. Then, of course, personality integration, we're really now talking about the fourth and fifth petal and the grand expressivity of that integration occurs in the fifth petal. Again, it's Leo. The fifth petal is the Leo petal. And, of course, Leo is one of the power signs, one of, from one perspective, a first-ray signs. So the crisis of individualization starts long ago on our planet, 21 million years ago, and on the moon chain, we've never been told exactly when it started, but one figures that since processes connected with the third aspect take a lot longer than with the second, then it occurred a long time ago, billions of years ago. It signifies the emergence of the personality and preparation for the Christ experience. The Christ experience, of course, is the birth of the Christ in the heart, and it's happening millions of years after the individualization. When really is there a personality? From the very first moment of individualization, we can't really say there is a personality, but perhaps there is the somehow seed of personality in the mental unit and also the astral and physical permanent atoms. It is a question about when the personality ray emerges. We know that it's rather late in the process, but is there what we might call a personality before the personality ray emerges? That's something that needs some discussion. So anyway, this crisis of individualization a very long time ago with its associated later developments, personality integration being the key there. It is self-consciousness and the lower synthesis, which did not exist in the diffuse animal consciousness without a center. So when we talk about personality integration, a petal process, which is in the fifth petal, is the final recipient of that which was started many, many years, millions of years, before this petal process could occur. It's almost like being individualized in the fifth kingdom of nature when you take the first initiation and the fifth petal is completely unfolded. And, you know, easily 21 million years ago. I mean, some people are faster than others, but there's so many people that individualized 21 million years ago, and they won't be ready to step on the path until, at least in my view, the judgment day in the next round, millions of years ahead. So it's a very slow process, this unfoldment, as rapidly as some of us who get an inkling of the meaning of spiritual development would love to, in a time-lapse manner, develop overnight, even though there is a forcing and pressured process at the moment with much opportunity, it's going to take a while. So one of the signs of maturity in the student of spirituality is the appearance of realism and patience to accompany that realism about time. Then we have another crisis. This is the crisis of balance. It comes later. The emergence of the sense of self-direction after a decision, I suppose. We should put that down. After a decision. And equilibrium. It is the point of equilibrium between soul and form. It signifies the emergence of free choice. It is consciousness of duality and the effort to balance the two. In a way, it begins to occur even before the first initiation. You see, you know, when we looked at the crisis in Leo, we sort of ended with the first initiation, but that crisis occurred long before. The crisis of individualization or becoming a focused, a self-aware self, eventually, that is, maybe after 3,000 years, awakening to the selfhood that has been implanted in us by the solar angel. So now we're at that point of reversing the wheel for the first time, and in a way we are in the process of reversing it constantly from the first reversal. We, in the second tier of petals, we get an inkling of the higher self, of the higher of the pairs of opposites. We thought we were a unitary being. We were in the hall of ignorance when we thought so. And then we begin to realize that there's something in us of a higher nature, and that something has its own pulls, its own magnetism, and it begins to operate upon us. So we're no longer quite content to be what we thought we were. And so we want to go in a different direction than the one we've been going in. We have been very involved with matter, form, and we've pretty well been preoccupied with it. It's like our whole life. All of our desires and our objectives relate to matter form until the higher of the pairs of opposites begin to pull. And Libra represents that pulling process, pulling in both ways. Matter form continues to exercise its own type of elemental magnetism, and then the higher self exercises its type of magnetism. So which way will we go? Well, first we might simply try to balance these two contrary magnetic poles and achieve some lives in which neither is dominant, but both are given their due. Eventually the scales, however, have to tip. You know, they can balance for a long time, perhaps, but ultimately spirit, you know, or soul, is going to outweigh spiritually matter, and so the scales will come down, one of the pans will come down. And of course the way this is done is through the power of choice, which Libra rules. Now, in my view, counting counterclockwise, Libra is connected with the seventh petal. It dispenses the third ray. The seventh petal seems connected with the lowest level of the higher mental plane, the third level. And when we work in the seventh petal, we are really preparing to move forward with the first initiation. Now, there can be, I suppose, some organizing of that petal, and there can be some lives, perhaps, in which one does not go too far in either direction, giving matter form its due and giving soul, spirit, its due. But eventually, a decision is made, and maybe it's at that point of decision, it strikes me, that it is possible, not long after, for the Bodhisattva as the first initiator to bring the individual who has decided upon spirituality through the process of the first initiation. Interestingly, Libra will be connected with the first initiation because it's esoteric ruler will be Uranus, which will be, from one perspective, ruling the sacral center, which is the center of particular interest at the first initiation, through the need to transfer its energy to the throat center. And of course, the throat center is involved in Libra too, interestingly, because Saturn is the hierarchical ruler. And Saturn, is connected for the disciple, and by this time one is at least a probationary disciple. It's connected with the throat for the disciple. So sacral and throat are both part of the Libran form of planetary expression. And then, of course, Venus is there as well, and that is a symbol or connected with the solar angel. But in the beginning, you know, while working in the fifth petal, there is a consciousness of duality and the effort to balance the two. So this would occur before the first initiation, because by the time we are equipped to take the first initiation, we have really made a decision to go for the soul spirit and stop, you know, excessively trying to make things even between something of lesser value and something of greater value. It is revealed to us that the soul spirit is definitely of greater value. So there will be, you know, different moments when the crisis of balance has to be achieved. At one point, I suppose, we're going to have to balance the demands of the soul and the demands of the spirit. It'll be on a much higher level, and the causal body, egoic lotus, will be very fully developed at that moment. and, you know, maybe that has something to do with what's going on in the synthesis petals, which as a whole, I think, are correlated with the air signs, of which Libra is one. It's a bit hard to assign first, second, and third aspect. It does seem like Aquarius is the first aspect, and that Libra or Gemini could be either the second or the third. They both have within them the qualities of three and two. Sometimes we look at Gemini and say, okay, it brings in the second ray, Libra brings in the third ray, but there's more to it. Libra does bring in the second ray, and Gemini is the third sign, ruled by Mercury, initially a third ray planet. So there's lots of different energies contributing to every great source. This crisis of balance, I'm going to say, well, in the middle petal, I used to think it was ruled by Libra. It's not ruled by Libra, but I'm just trying to think, if you go backwards and start with Pisces, I don't even think there it works out. Let me just see. So it goes Pisces, Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, then going backwards, then Sagittarius, Scorpio. No, you see, Sagittarius, Scorpio, it doesn't. And from another perspective, if we started at Aries and went backwards, we'd have, backwards, clockwise that is, we'd have Aries, Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, Capricorn, Sagittarius, yeah, Scorpio. So then it'd be Sagittarius. So no matter how hard I try, I can't get Libra by a natural sign progression into that middle petal. But in terms of meaning, I certainly can, because Libra is the balance point. And the number five is the balance between the one and the nine. So I do think there are really important decisions being made about whether to go on the path of aspiration right in that fifth petal, and I think Libra is involved. Maybe I'll be able to say a little bit more about it later. And then Capricorn. This is the crisis of initiation. This exists in five stages, so Usually we simply consider our first five initiations from the birth to mastership, Revelation it's called, as the five. And Capricorn involved in every one of them, though its reputation is more related to the third initiation. But, you know, being born in the manger at Christmas time, I've got to say there's a very close connection between Capricorn and the first initiation as well. So there exists, this exists in five stages and signifies the emergence of the dominating Christ. Well, that is, you know, D.K. is so careful. He's a master of language. He's not just using a word for no good reason. You know, the ancient authority of the personality ends at the third initiation, and when the soul life becomes truly dominant, it is the third initiation. Leo is the dominator. That's the third degree and the fifth degree. Eventually, the soul life becomes the dominus. It is the one who controls all things. The word dome is in there, and there's a part of the head, I understand from phrenology, that is ruled by Leo, and it is considered to be the dome of the head. So maybe some kinds of power of domination can be associated with those parts of the brain. Of course, the brain research is always surprising, and maybe a lot of the old phrenology will break down, but some of it, I think, is of great value. Just when you look at foreheads and the different kinds of foreheads you get under Jupiter, which rules the higher part of the forehead, or Mars, the lower part of the forehead, the degree of its triangulation, the degree to which it seems to expand outward, and the degree of its inclination, the degree of its perpendicular rising, all of that is not for nothing. Studying the form will reveal the energy patterns behind the form. So we have the crisis of initiation. It's fivefold. And the emergence of the dominating Christ life, dominating at the third degree and truly dominating and masterfully dominating at the fifth degree. I think I can maybe put that in. Excuse me. Masterfully dominating the life at the fifth degree. But beginning that authoritative domination at the third degree. Third degree. Well, maybe I don't have it. It means the higher synthesis and the control of the Christ consciousness, which is group consciousness, and it's the movement into the I am that of Leo. We have to understand that though Capricorn can seem a very individualistic and selfish sign, later it becomes exactly the opposite. So this is the crisis of initiation, and from a certain point of view, we can relate the energy of Capricorn to all of the sacrifice petals. After all, Saturn is a major planet of sacrifice, and Saturn is the double ruler of Capricorn, and it is in these sacrifice petals and also in relation to the synthesis petals that initiation does occur. That is the area to which the rod of initiation is, if not applied, then directed. I mean, we are not given the secrets of initiation to know how that rod of the Bodhisattva and then the rod of Sanakumara is wielded. We're not given that. But we do know that the abnormal efforts, let's see, maybe if I look up the word abnormal, it will tell me something. I think it's important. And abnormal effort, abnormal something, initiation. Oh, is it possible that there will be... Oh, I'm not even spelling it correctly. That's my problem. So we have four references here. Maybe we'll find it. Your capacity for suffering is abnormal. Okay, he was a sixth ray soul. It's oftentimes understood as abnormal. Aha, here it is. This is the one I'm looking for, and it's in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, probably in one of the important sections that we are going to study. So this final opening is affected by during the period of treading the stages of the path of initiation, and in the round it is hastened by the rites of initiation and by the strenuous abnormal efforts of the man himself, aided by the electrical work of the initiator wielding the rod of power. So that is work taking place within the petals of sacrifice and in the Hall of Wisdom. We're only in the Hall of Learning when we're in the middle three petals. This inner circle of petals is organized and vitalized in the Hall of Wisdom, and simultaneously the middle circle unfolds. So the two rows of petals are duly opened, and only the third remains to be unclosed. This final unclosing, final opening, is effected during the period of treading the stages of the path of initiation, and in this round is hastened, this round anyway, fourth round, by the rites of initiation and by the strenuous and abnormal efforts of the man himself. So get ready for strenuous abnormal effort plus the application of the rod of initiation. This is a very important thing here. Is it possible, you know, is it possible to enter the Hall of Wisdom? Well, let's just say there's organization and vitalization going on in the Hall of Wisdom while the fifth and sixth petal are unfolding, indicating the first and second initiations. So it's hard to say, you know, what amount of time is involved in organization and vitalization, and what amount of time and when we have opening and unfoldment and final unfoldment. When we're working in the seventh petal and the eighth petal, they may not be unfolding to any great measure. We may simply be organizing them and vitalizing them, and maybe the unfoldment will come with relative rapidity. But in any case, this stage of initiation involves us working in those that inner circle of petals, not the innermost circle of petals, that's a different thing, but the inner circle of petals, the sacrifice petals, which I have correlated with the fire signs, and which, if we simply go by counterclockwise strict order, will belong to Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. Yeah, so the ninth petal will be an Aries-Sagittarius petal, the eighth petal will be a Leo-Scorpio petal, and the seventh petal will be a Libra. Now, did I say Libra in the other one? Should be Leo-Scorpio petal for the eighth, and then the seventh petal will be a Libra-Sagittarius petal. Both of those strongly related, interestingly enough, with balance. Okay, so here we are. Capricorn involved in all those petals, but especially in the unfolding of the ninth petal, which is finally occurring at the third initiation. And from another point of view, if we continue the clockwise sequential assignment of the signs, Capricorn will indicate the first of the synthesis petals, which begins to unfold at the first initiation, which is the birth of the Christ in the heart. And, you know, Capricorn, Christmas, the winter solstice, the sun moving northward, the Christ energy growing. It's quite interesting that Capricorn will have a connection with the first degree, but also it should be connected with the third degree and with the ninth petal. Then Aquarius will be the second synthesis petal, and that petal could have a lot to do with the second initiation, because after all, there is a great house cleaning of the astral plane and other planes which have to occur at the second initiation. And Aquarius is that sign which symbolizes the cleansing of the Augean stables through the release of two rivers. Immediately, the idea of water is found there. So it can be well be associated with the second initiation, and it does begin to open, we are told, at the second initiation. The final synthesis petal we're going to see will be in the sequential ordering related to Pisces. And this is a sign of synthesis and of the Father's will. We are told, you know, that some end their career in relation to Shambhala at the fifth initiation through the sign Pisces, but others will use Aquarius. Pisces is very fitting to rule the third and last synthesis petal, because we started with the very first petal at with Aries. But there's another way of doing that, you know, so that we could start over here with Pisces, and then the last synthesis petal would be Aries. And, you know, we would have the Alpha Aries and the Omega then coming together in the final synthesis petal, which is the synthesis of the will, and both of them are extremely related to the will. Pluto is powerful, and thus Shambhala, in both of these signs, Aries and Pisces. Well, I'll try to speak more about that, you know, in a sequential manner. So here we have there three signs which relate to crises. There are therefore nine signs through which potencies pour, which are creative in their effect, and which produce changes which are needed in the progress of the soul towards divine expression. You have also three signs of crisis, whereby points in evolution, the point in evolution is determined, and in this connection it should be noted, and we'll note the following. Now, so nine signs of creativity lead to the three crises, but when we go down and look at a further gathering of crises, we have seven crises. And not only three, which are Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. Yes, we do have Capricorn and Leo listed here, so they double up in a way, but they are associated with different kinds of crises and different kinds of initiation. I suppose when we look at these, the signs of crisis will be specifically, okay, well, let's just do that. Leo, Libra, even though at another point it tells us that Aries and Libra are not signs of crises, ruling the equinoxes as they do, Capricorn, Cancer, Aries, Gemini, Scorpio, and Virgo. So how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then perhaps we can look at whether there are four signs which are not signs of crisis, maybe. And they would be Taurus, although, you know, in Taurus the life seems full of struggle and difficulty. Sagittarius, Aquarius, and Pisces. Well, this has to be, you know, simply that these are technically not the signs of crisis as here illustrated. All of these do involve themselves in various kinds of crisis. And I certainly, when I look at Pisces and I look at Taurus, it looks very much the case. Whether there is in Sagittarius the production of crisis particularly, or in Aquarius, well, that will remain to be seen. Okay. Now we will continue. So these other signs, they really are not, let's see, they are not considered to be signs of crisis per se. Leo, Libra, Capricorn constitute the triangle of the Father or the will aspect. They mark points of attainment through crisis met and triumphant achievement. And I think especially we have that triumph upon the mountaintop for Capricorn and maybe the triumph of the fifth initiation for Leo later. A different kinds of crisis. What is interesting is to look at the rays coming through these signs. Look at the rays. So through Leo, 1, 5. Through Libra, at least what's given to us, is 3. Through Capricorn, we have 1, 3, 7. So, all the hard line rays. And this is another kind of confirmation that these are signs of related to the Father aspect. Now, Cancer, Virgo, Pisces constitute the triangle of the Mother aspect. The Moon is powerful in all of these, even in Pisces. It is the matter in which the nascent soul goes forth as the fish, go forth into matter. They constitute the triangle of the mother or matter aspect conditioned by intelligent activity. This is the third aspect. Now we can pause here for a moment and see how that might be. The third aspect of divinity is the aspect of intelligent activity. All right. So we have the ocean of matter, mother in Cancer. We have the third ray very strong in Cancer along with the seventh. In Virgo, although we have 2 and 6 in Pisces, 2 and 6, Virgo has a relation to the third aspect of divinity and was in the previous major solar system ruled by the third ray. Virgo was the second sign governing the latter half of that solar system, just the way Cancer governed the first. Pisces always represents the water that is matter. So in many respects, Pisces can be quite a materialistic sign. It has to do with being contained by, fascinated by, engrossed in the water that is matter. So these signs, they're more subjective in a way, more feminine, they indicate points of opportunity of an inner kind where consciousness is concerned, and therefore you have the recognition of mass, individual, and group consciousness. Now, I wonder how that works. It would seem that mass consciousness in this context will be associated with Cancer. The individual consciousness, which is so discriminating with Virgo, kind of a Virgo-Leo-Sphinx combination, and the group consciousness will be connected with Pisces, this sign of being able to blend into the other seamlessly and recognize the other as oneself. Okay, let's go on just a little more here. A close study of the above idea will prove fruitful in establishing methods and relationships. They should also indicate the key which astrologers can use when seeking to work with mass horoscopes. I suppose the horoscopes of mass consciousness in Cancer particularly, and maybe in Pisces. There is that statement, let the mark of the Savior as the group toils in Pisces be seen above the aura of the group. So Pisces is also a mass sign. whatever mass horoscopes may be, you know, probably the horoscope of a certain group or of man at a certain year and stage of unfoldment in general, man the mass, man the intelligent ones, man the disciple. It's possible probably to work with the horoscopes of all of these types. So let's see where we are at the moment. I think we can maybe pause at this point and bring in the next program, Nine Signs and Attendant Crises, and that will lead us eventually into the crisis of the soul, which is most interesting. And we can see whether we think that other signs should be there. Interestingly enough, the Capricorn and Leo crisis talked about in the first combination of three are not very much the same as the Capricorn and Leo, or at least as part of it, in terms of the crisis of the soul, because crisis of the burning ground, we're talking about the fifth initiation here, when all of the matter of the causal body is being consumed, the air is being cleared, and one is treading the burning ground into the atomic plane, the fifth plane. And, of course, we can begin to think about whether there is a higher structure on the atomic plane, comparable on a higher turn of the spiral to the causal body on the higher mental plane. There seem to be indications that this is the case. So we've done a little bit of exploring about crisis, signs of crisis, and signs of not crisis. And when I take up the next one, what I will do is begin here and finish this little section on crisis. I mean, why is it important, you know, as we go around this process, as we focus in different ways upon the inner flower, there are going to be these testing points. And if we are in the process of going through a test, a crisis, the decision in relation to which turns out to be very important, we had better know it, don't you think? Because when a crisis is recognized, it can be met and it can be confronted, it can be worked through and transcended. But when a crisis is not recognized, it's just a hard time we're passing through, and we don't know its nature, we don't know what its issue is supposed to be. So we should recognize those turning points or those crises which we force ourselves to go through as souls, and which we go through rather ignorantly often as personalities. We should recognize those moments of crisis. And in these very special, powerful, decisive days, DK pretty well wants us all to be living in crisis. He says, see that you battle. And the idea behind his words is, if you're not having a crisis, why are you not having a crisis? You're not taking the opportunity to make the decision which will free you from your conditioning. Okay, well, I'd like to end this program 13 now, I think. And let's just, I think it's necessary to put down the indications of where we have been, how far we have been. Well, I can't really talk about page numbers so much because we are combining these different sections, which have different pages. So it's not like one continuous document, which I have used before. But we're at this point before the nine signs which lead to the three forms of crisis discussed in relation to Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. So this is the end of Egoic Lotus webinar commentary program 13. And let's just say we are working in esoteric astrology. And we'll have now the beginning of Egoic Lotus webinar commentary, program 14. I mistyped here. This was the end of... Yeah, come on. Let's get that cursor where it belongs. Program 13, and we'll start 14. We'll just continue along this line. There's so much to be said here, so much to be thought about. You know, when we pass through the egoic lotus, we don't necessarily think, what crisis am I in now? What is really at stake? What is the decision which, if rightly made, will make it possible for me to take my next step forward and will bring about the unfoldment in these vortices which is intended to happen? We don't live that consciously, and this kind of material is supposed to help us definitely live more consciously. Okay, everybody, this program will only be about an hour. I have a webinar coming up, and I have to be ready for that. You know, with live people, of course, you are live people too, aren't you? But I'm pretty well talking to myself, and sometimes I don't feel quite so live. But I know that in talking to myself, I'm talking to you at the same time. And metaphysically, we could really get into what that means. Okay, we'll see you before long. You have a good whatever, day, night, whatever it may be.